Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Adam Carrington. He's an assistant professor of politics at Hillsdale College, and we're going to talk about the recent Supreme Court decisions, the makeup of the court, John Roberts, etc. And Dr. Carrington, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Well, first of all, how would you evaluate the recent Supreme Court decisions? Were you surprised by some of the outcomes, and were you surprised by any of the ways in which they derived those outcomes?
Yes, on at least a couple counts, I was. I think that in some ways, I was surprised at how convoluted, in some ways, the census citizenship case was. There were sort of moving majorities throughout, and the court, in some ways, affirmed what the Trump administration was doing, and on one point, just really didn't deny it, but just sort of questioned it. So I was surprised that that wasn't as clear. Another one that I was at least modestly surprised on was Kaiser versus Wilkie, which was a administrative law case about trying to rein back bureaucrats' lawmaking, and I thought that the case there was probably going to go a little bit more against the bureaucrats than it did. And the other thing I that sort of summed up some of these cases was there were a number of instances where the court could have really gone big one way or another with a decision and really chose to sort of push down the road those big decisions. So in some ways I've talked before about the term being kind of a term on the brink, as if the court was really setting up a lot bigger issues in the future. And that surprised me as a whole as well.
Okay. Oh, what would be an example where they kind of kicked the can down the street? I know they did that last year with the Masterpiece Cake case, where they didn't really deal with the issues involved. But what would you see this year as being kind of like, well, we'll not deal with this right now. Not the substance, not the issue.
Right. Two cases I'd mentioned. One is that one they didn't take, which was basically almost a carbon copy of Masterpiece Cake Shop, where instead of taking the case and finally trying to decide the free speech and free exercise questions that you noted rightly that they avoided with Masterpiece, they just chose not to take it. So that's one way I think they kicked the can.
Are you talking about the case out of Oregon? Forgive me if you're interrupting. I've interviewed those people. I've met Melissa and Aaron Klein of Sweet Cakes by Melissa. But the one thing the Supreme Court did do this year in related to that case, they had to, those people were being fined $135,000 for not baking a cake for a lesbian couple, because their Christian convictions would not allow them to do. It's my understanding that the Supreme Court, even though they didn't agree to take the case of Sweet Cakes by Melissa, they did agree that that fine, that they didn't have to pay that fine. So I don't fully understand this decision or how that works, but that part of it sounded good to me.
Right, and they remanded it, which means sent it back to the lower courts and wanted them to rethink about the case in light of Masterpiece. But that still, based on what you rightly said, that Masterpiece itself didn't decide fundamentally the question of do you have a First Amendment free speech or free exercise right to refuse service based on your religious convictions. They refused to take the case to decide that question. So maybe getting rid of the fine might show how they might decide if they ever take that case, but they still decided to defer on that actual question, which means, by the way, lower courts still don't have any definitive guidance from the court on that.
Okay. What would be another, I believe you said there was another case of this term where they kind of basically kick the can down the road. What would that be?
Right. The other is Gundy versus United States, and to know why that case mattered, they brought up an issue where a lot of our laws today. A lot of the regulations that govern businesses or individuals are actually not made by Congress, but by bureaucrats, unelected bureaucrats that constitutionally really aren't supposed to be doing this. And there was a case where the court had a chance to rein that in a bit and say, you know, actually Congress should be doing much more of the lawmaking, not bureaucrats. And here's an example of it. And what the court basically did is they were split, it seemed, 4-4, because Kavanaugh wasn't able to participate. And what they ended up doing was basically on very narrow grounds, affirming the law that was being debated. But what basically happened is four justices said, no, we think it's fine that bureaucrats make laws. About four of the justices said, no, we have a problem with this. And then Kavanaugh was the X factor. And so what really that case begged for is another one to come up with a full nine justices with Kavanaugh able to vote on this question of, do we want bureaucrats making our laws, or do we want the constitutional branch supposed to Congress doing so? So that's the other big one, I think, that got pushed to another term.
And that's not related to the census, though, then, I guess.
No, that's not related.
Oh, okay.
In the census case, yeah, I think also a bit
that.
Of a punt too, although I don't know how much beyond the particular question of the census, I'm not sure how much of a precedent that's going to set down the road. I think we're going to have to see what courts do with it.
All right. Now, would it be fair to say that Justice Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito are the most conservative justices sitting on the court? That Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor would be the most liberal, you know, consistently liberal, and the other two consistently conservative. And then the other people in between, now obviously Kagan is to the left, and so is Breyer. But the other three are generally to the right, but I don't know where, I don't know how to assess Justice Roberts, a Supreme Court Chief Justice Roberts. So why don't you comment a little bit about Justice Roberts, Chief Justice?
Right, and I think that's a fair assessment the way you line those up, and you can see that in the votes. There were actually a number of times Breyer and Kagan joined the conservatives, and then the other justices that you said were in the middle joined the more Democratic appointees. But Roberts, really, a lot of people were saying that he would become, in many cases, the new median justice after Kennedy retired, that he would be the swing vote if there was a 5-4 vote. And we found that at least a couple times. And I think the thing to keep in mind with Roberts, I think, is that he is thinking on two levels that aren't the same as an Alito or a Thomas. And I think those two levels are, one, as Chief Justice, he's very concerned that the court be seen as above partisanship, not that every decision is going to be made along political lines. And he acts in certain ways thinking, now there's great debate whether this is true or not, thinking that he's preserving the integrity of the court. The other is he's kind of conservative temperamentally, and that's different than conservative as far as your policy positions or the law. He doesn't want often for massive change to happen quickly. He kind of wants to move incrementally. And I think that some of his votes where he jumped to the other side can be explained by those two temperamental things that I think make him a little harder to read if you're just looking at the way, say, an Alito or a Thomas decide things.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I know a guy that that warned about Clarence Thomas. He warned about Justice John Roberts that he didn't have a clear philosophy. And then any time Roberts makes a bad decision or something, see, I told you. But it's kind of weird because it seems that in something, I mean, I remember when the Obergefell case came down in 2015, here John Roberts said, look, if you agree with same-sex marriage, you'll love this decision, but just recognize something. It has nothing to do with the Constitution. And I thought, wow, here's the Chief Justice of the United States basically blasting the Supreme Court for doing something that was so blatantly unconstitutional and saying as such. So, I mean, there's still some ways in which Roberts is definitely a conservative.
Yeah, you can't read Roberts nearly as many do from his healthcare case. that back in 2012, which is, of course, is legacy defying. And even, and I think one thing with Obergefell is that's a massive change in our law. So his, I think both his reading of the Constitution and his temperamental conservatism, both those things went off to say that Obergefell was several steps too far. And I think on other things, especially things that aren't as hot button, he's been the deciding vote to take the court in a more conservative direction. I don't know how many you know, listeners may be familiar last year with the Janus case, the union free speech case. Mm-hmm. Massive change in the way that free speech law is understood, the way labor unions, what they can do. It was a 5-4 vote with Roberts being one of the votes to overturn that old precedent. So there are times where he's able to do where he does jump in and do that. But I think on really hot button issues is where he sometimes balks at that question. So I agree. He's not always entirely predictable, but those factors that I've mentioned are the best sense I've been able to make of when he kind of jumps out of character based on who you think he would be.
So all things considered, basically, John Roberts wouldn't want to rock the boat too much in general.
Right. I think he would want incremental change. Even some of the votes this year, he basically said, I think I'm voting to move in the right direction, not to try to get there immediately, which again is a kind of temperamental difference from Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas wrote an opinion this term where all he really wanted to do is say we shouldn't be as respectful of precedent. Why? Because he thinks we need to rock the boat where the Constitution is wrong. And I think that's where you see, I think if both men were deciding the same case for the first time, they'd probably vote very similarly. But the fact that Clarence Thomas is willing to really blow things up to try to return them back to the original Constitution, and Roberts is a little more reticent to do so, I think explains a lot of their divergences.
You just said that Clarence Thomas thinks we should blow things up when the Constitution is wrong, but I think you mean when the Supreme Court is wrong in interpreting the Constitution, correct?
Yeah, pardon me, that was a misspeak. Yeah, when he thinks that...
Yeah, no, I got it.
This conflict between precedent and the original meaning of the Constitution, you always have to go with the original meaning, which makes a lot of sense. I think Roberts is a little more worried that if you have this long history of the court doing something some way, that should have certain power. And I think everybody's got Roe v. Wade in mind.
Yeah,
everyone sort of was fighting a little proxy battle in the court about if we take a Roe v. Wade case, what's the standing of a precedent that you might not have agreed with, but has been settled law for a while. And I think that was what some of those opinions were really getting at without claiming they were.
And all the real battles a lot of times in judicial appointments, really, they do boil down to battles over Roe v. Wade. All right, how about the Bladensburg Cross? By the way, we have a minute and a half left.
Okay, very quickly. This surprised me because Breyer and Kagan joined the other conservative justices to say that this cross was fine. I think, again, this was a move in the right direction. It said that historic monuments are fine, even if they might have had religious meaning, but it left open about future religious displays. And so I think that what it set up is that we're going to be more respectful of historic utterances of religion, historic monuments for religion, and it left more to be decided in the future, but it at least clarified that. I don't think you're going to get many more cases trying to attack historic Christian monuments and things like that.
Yeah. So religion and Little House on the Prairie, that's fine, but religion today, no, can't have that. I'm just kidding.
Right. If you set up a new Ten Commandments tomorrow, no. But if you have historically prayed before, say, a city council meeting, that's going to be fine. And part of it is the courts was not willing yet to have a conversation about what is the place of religion in our public life beyond a historical artifact. Is it a real vibrant living thing for us here and now? That's the really, I think that's the most important question and the one they still haven't answered, at least as far as how they read the Constitution.
Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale, thank you so much for being with us. Hillsdale.edu for more information. Thank you, sir. All the best.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.